chose this subject for this morning, and it was a bit of a strange title. It was, what do we bring to the table? What do we bring to the table? Now, of course, we have a table that many of us have had the chance to bring food to for after this service. And just to say to any of you, if any of you didn't know we're having a church meal, if any of you haven't brought food, it's fine, because some of us have done whole kilograms of chicken. I know one particular person who contacted me this morning to tell me how many kilograms of chicken they had. Seriously, we have lots of food. We're going to have a lock-in over there. Until the food's gone, nobody's going home. So please, do stay to the meal, even if you haven't brought anything to share. So that's one sense. But actually, the Bible has lots of verses in it, in the Old Testament, and then, of course, Jesus and others pick up on this idea of the great banquet. So I want to just bring up some verses, and these verses are from Isaiah chapter 25. And they've got pictures each, and it's only four verses. And in this verse, of course, Isaiah was a prophet. So Isaiah was inspired to write these words. And he saw this vision and he put it into these words. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples. A banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove his people's disgrace from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. In that day they will say, surely this is our God. We trusted in him and he saved us. This is the sovereign Lord. We trusted in him. Let us rejoice and be glad in his salvation. So just for a few moments this morning, because it is an all-age service, I'm just wanting to reflect on these verses. So firstly, God's promises. I want to show you and just share with you some of these promises that God makes in these verses. Firstly, in verse 6, we have his abundant multicultural rule. Now you see, in this world with human beings, we often get, they say you get the politicians you deserve, don't they? And I have to say that, the leaders we have in the world today, I don't know about you, but I struggle with some of them. I feel as though some of them are much more about how great I can look rather than how well I can serve. And I think that is so true of, and I don't want to name any because it's so easy to go to the usual names, but we know who we're thinking of. But God promises, and Isaiah has this vision in these verses of someone who will rule, but his rule, his reign, will be of abundant goodness. Abundant goodness, generosity. And you can see there on the table that this picture of the beautiful feast laid out before all people. And also it's a multicultural rule because it's for all peoples. All peoples will enjoy this wonderful, generous, rich feast. Now the mountain referred to is Mount Zion. And Mount Zion is an actual place. You can walk up that mountain, or it's more of a hill really, a large hill, in Jerusalem. But of course, it isn't just a physical hill, mountain. It's a spiritual picture. It's a metaphor for the dwelling place of God, for the holy city, that place that sort of encapsulates that sense of God's presence with his people. And so we have this idea of on this mountain, this wonderful feast being prepared. Now this fact is that every culture, if the food is for all peoples, and so all peoples will be served the food they love. Now I've said to you already, I brought along peppered steak. I didn't make it. I went along to Blue Jays and got them to make it for me. Because, I didn't think it was really going to... You wouldn't want to, you know... I have fairly... I'm sorry, I think there's some people being really, really unfair about that. I'm doing my best. But I knew my skills wouldn't extend to peppered steak. So I went to, I gave Dave a ring yesterday and said to him, can you just prepare? Don't do the rice, I was told. You don't need to worry about rice, it's sorted. So, but Gloria said, if you want to bring some peppered steak, do so. So I gave Dave a ring and he said, you can come along. I'll box it up for you and it's over there and I'm looking forward to it. And I will share it with you a little bit. But seriously, we often love food from our cultures, don't we? Some of us, we really miss food from home. And actually, we learn to cook food from home. And we learn to, we value it. And I think it's so, it's a reflection, actually, of our culture that we enjoy those things that remind us, not just of home, but of family. Because even in this country, we may find that actually we want to be reminded of our culture, of where our family came from. Even generations back, we love to revel in and enjoy our culture. And that's so important because God is a creative God and he made us to be creative people. Sadly, some of us more creative than others, particularly in the culinary department. But all the same, we are created to be creative. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I remember my first taste of food from the Caribbean. It was when, I think it was my mother-in-law had made a lovely meal for us at their house in Wood Green. And I remember going along and it was just, I'd never tasted anything so rich. My mum's a fairly plain English cook and I'm not knocking it, it is what it is. And to be honest with you, I got to the 20 years that I got to mainly because of my mum's cooking. But when I tasted food from the Caribbean, I felt as though I came, my taste buds were sort of like absolutely astounded and it was amazing. I'm going to stop going on now because I'm going to make you all more hungry. But basically, I remember discovering a different type of food to what I had grown up with. And so it's not just reflecting on the foods we grew up with, it's also discovering the joys of what each of us bring to the table. And as I've said already, jollof rice, both Nigerian and Ghanaian, are both delicious. And we all bring something. We all bring not just food, we bring who we are. And that's why I did the thing with the chocolate coins. Because actually, it's a way of saying each one of us brings something unique. If you weren't here in this church this morning, this afternoon, we would be the poorer. We wouldn't be quite the same rich fellowship that we are if you weren't here. Each one of us contributes to the whole. We are, as Valerie and I said earlier on, we are the body. And what would the body be? If the body was all an eye, how would we hear? If the body was all a foot, how would we smell? Each one of us brings something different to the table. So this first picture is God's, his abundant multicultural rule. It's a promise of a rich, satisfying celebration of God's creativity expressed partly through each one of us. Christine was telling me in that text that she sent me this morning about a marvelous party she went to yesterday where there was a live saxophonist and he played some of the really, the great music and you were up there dancing away and having a wonderful time. You weren't dancing away. You were listening, but you were dancing in your heart, weren't you, Chris? Absolutely. Others were dancing. I have a great ability to dad dance and I dad dance on every occasion that I can. So, yeah, but it's about that celebration, that creativity that is expressed through us. There we go. So it's his abundant multicultural rule. And then in verses 7 and 8 of the reading, we find there that the picture is that the world is gripped, it's wrapped. If you know what a shroud often wraps up a body before it is buried. And that shroud is wrapped tight enough to keep the body so that it doesn't sort of, you know, fall, as it were, or it's kept together. But of course, if a live body is wrapped in a shroud, then it is restricted. It can't move. It can't express itself. And so in this verse, there is this idea that the whole world is wrapped, it's trapped in a shroud. And it's a shroud of not just of physical death. It's actually a shroud, it's a spiritual death. It's an active force of negativity that seeks to prevent human well-being. It seeks to prevent us prospering. It seeks to prevent us flourishing. It's that that spirit of death that is saying, you can't achieve anything. You can't be special. Does God really love you? It's those doubts that the enemy wants to plant in our minds that we're not good enough. It's that spirit of death, its power comes from the enemy. And he wants to tell us that we're not good enough, that we have nothing to bring to the table. But it's not true. The enemy is called the father of lies, the deceiver. And he will tell us that we're not good enough. But we are told that God will bring an end to death and its power. It doesn't mean to say we won't physically die. We will. But death, physical death, is not the end of our lives. We believe as Christians that we are going to be with God. And there we will be able to express our creativity in even greater ways than we can on this earth. So, here we have, I was thinking this week of that awful, awful terrorist attack up in Manchester. Think for a moment what a destructive, hateful mindset the person must have had to do what he did to people who simply wanted to worship. And that's the end product, that's the sort of the destination of that negative, death-filled mindset. If you take it to its conclusion, those are the sorts of things you have happening. And not just in Manchester, but in so many parts of our world, where actually there is a mindset of, I don't care what I do to you, as long as me and mine are safe and rich and protected. And that is that negative death mindset. And this is what God promises to overcome. So the promise here is that God will swallow up, a bit like, do you remember the great big fish? We call it a whale. It wasn't actually a whale. We're told it's a big fish that swallowed up Jonah. And it's the picture here is that God, like an enormous fish, will swallow up that negative mindset, death and its power. The third picture that we have in these verses is God's long-awaited shalom. And shalom is one of those words that has much more to it than just peace. Shalom is about, it's about well-being. It's about wholeness. It's about being fulfilled. It's about expressing who we are, being valued for who we are. Shalom is about all of those things, about flourishing, about being fully who God intended us to be. And in that verse, verse 9, we have it twice. The word trusted is used. We trusted in God. But the word trusted can also perhaps be better translated as we waited on God, or it could be we hoped in God. So it's that picture of trust, picture of waiting, picture of hoping. And there's that lovely verse that talks about, you know, hope. We hope for something we don't see. We hope for something that is promised, but we don't yet see. And so we are waiting for God's full shalom, his peace. And to some degree, we see it in church life. To some degree, there's a little glimpse of what God's shalom will mean already means amongst us. But the promise is that one day this shalom will be full and complete when we sit and eat that glorious banquet in God's on God's holy mountain. There was a word, the last word in that reading was, let us rejoice and be glad in his salvation. The word salvation in Hebrew is actually the word Yeshua. Salvation, the word Yeshua, from which we get the names Joshua, Jehovah, and Jesus. Those three names come from this idea of the word Yeshua in Hebrew. So the promise here is that if we will trust, if we will wait, if we will hope in the Lord, his holistic, his whole kingdom of God will come to us and will fill us, but we wait for it, for a future day when it will fully come.